Hello, everybody. man, I just want to start off, just go over a couple of things. You know, I'm going to talk about what happened, what it's like, and what it's like now. This is my second time telling my story with Austin Recovery, but I don't want to touch a lot. I don't want to focus on a lot of what happened because we all know what happened, but I will go over that for about 10 minutes or so. So without further ado, my name is David. I'm a grateful addict to alcoholic. My drug of no choice, because I'm without defense against the first drinker drug. So my drug of no choice is heroin, crack, both IV and also alcohol, and meth too. I like meth on some days. Growing up for me, I was raised in a good household. I actually went to Catholic school till I was in sixth grade. Life was good. Family was really, my parents were involved in the community. And so everybody kind of knew my parents and knew us kids growing up. Let's see, I have three sisters and a brother. And my parents are separated. My dad's married again, and my mom's in a current relationship. Like I said, went to Catholic school till I was in sixth grade. Parents got divorced. Mom cheated on my dad. And that's where things got rough. Went to public school, and it was a whole new game. Public school was a lot different than Catholic school. When my mom cheated on my dad, my dad was very structured and strict, and had rules and disciplined, which was good and which is what we needed growing up. And my mom, on the other hand, was she was enabling. She was the fun parent. And so seventh grade, I have a twin sister, seventh grade, my mom was, buying alcohol, for us at that age. I remember stealing cigarettes out of the freezer, due to, you know, just because I wanted to smoke. They were Virginia Slims, which is embarrassing, but whatever. So anyway, my mom was enabling and, you know, at that time, you know, at that age, we thought because my mom accepted it, I thought this what I was doing was not okay, but I just felt cool. Parties would be at our house, and it was just it was what I was doing. You know, fast forward into high school, I was addicted to 6 Roxy 30s a day, so that's 180 milligrams of Roxy 30s, the little blue ones. At $180 habit a day. I was working at a gas station and stealing from the drawer and stuff like that to pay for my habit. I always there was a lot of depression from my parents' divorce, from living, you know, being middle class and having a good home and being, you know, in the middle of a neighborhood where our house was the hangout spot to parents get separated. And now I'm involved in now I'm living in a duplex and we had to move. And my mom moved 6 times in, I think it was 20 months. It was rough. And so the main thing was I always wanted to seek out attention. I always wanted to be the life of the party, and I still do at times. I still do, not at times, always. I want to be the life of the party. My freshman year of high school, my mom left us for 3 years. I struggled with abandonment issues, and I didn't know how to cope with these things. You know, my dad obviously had a lot of, if you want to say, resentment around, you know, the whole situation that happened with him and my mom. We were young, and so I didn't really know how to deal with it. My dad was put in a lot of debt and had to, you know, provide for us and so he wasn't home that much. on the weekends, and so I would go out and just do what I do. And so fast forward, man, I moved to Texas. And a little bit about me, you know, my background. I have 22 misdemeanors and 2 felonies on my record. I've been to prison twice. I've been to treatment 5 times. The sad thing is like I thought what was cool was going to prison and getting that TDC number, right? I thought going to treatment and using hardcore drugs was like actually cool. Like I wanted that cool card. and so I moved down here to Texas. My mom had told me, she said, hey, like move down here. This is this is my senior year of high school. I moved down here and my stepdad was an alcoholic. He was drinking 100 proof Smirnoff a day. And so I started jumping in and drinking with him. And started taking Xanax, started smoking weed. But I was giving myself the permission statement, hey, I'm not doing Roxy's, you know. I'm not doing what I was doing up in Pennsylvania, you know. And so I didn't know about the 12 steps yet. And it was just this repetitive cycle that I always wanted to change the way that I felt. And so I got into some legal trouble, senior in high school here, in Texas. I was working overnight at Randall's, from 10 o'clock at night to 7 in the morning. And then I was going to school my senior year of high school from 8 o'clock to 3:30 in the afternoon. We lost our house. We were living in a Motel 6. I was taking Xanax and, other substances. I don't even remember at the time. But I was leaving Randall's one morning and I fell asleep at the wheel, here in Cedar Park. And when I fell asleep at the wheel, I went into oncoming traffic. And I flipped an SUV and I almost killed a lady in a car accident. That was my first charge. The reason why I was charged was I had no license, no insurance. It wasn't my car, it was my stepdad's car and he was in treatment for alcoholism. It was in Williamson County. I was on trial for 13 months, they ended up, because I was a senior in high school, it was my first charge ever, they decided to put me on it's a form of like, almost like shock probation is what it was. It was like a really difficult stipulation for probation. I had to do a lot of things. And I didn't want to stop using. So I remember me failing a drug test for methamphetamine and everything else, and going to see my probation officer, and I cussed her out basically. I mean, I told her to fuck off. And that ended me up in a place called CTTC. That was my first treatment center I went to. It was called Central Texas Treatment Center. I was there for 6 months, and something that happened was I was attention seeking. I was put on NOCOM under 30. I couldn't talk to anybody under 30 years old. I couldn't talk to any of the females because I was seeking female attention. I was on cafeteria restriction. I couldn't even eat in the cafeteria. So through my stay there, I had probably about six months there. And there's phases that you have to phase up in. And I didn't like some of the work that you had to do there. You had to hold people accountable. And I just was like, some of my belief systems growing up was, man, to each their own, like who gives a shit what other people are doing, you know, I got to focus on me, you know? And so, I was passing notes to a female and a friend of mine. We're sitting in like large group. You have all the females and all the males in this group. So there was probably like 35 females and 40 males or something like that. I forget the number. But anyway, a buddy of mine, his name was Steven, he called me out in this large group. And he said, David is passing notes with Angela. And I am also passing notes with another female. And so they were talking amongst themselves and they ended up restarting me in the program. They said, all right, we're going to restart you back from day one. You're going back into orientation. So I remember going back to my room. I punched the bed frame, the bunk bed, and I was so mad. I punched it. Well, the guy that held me accountable, my buddy Steven, he said, he came in front of my door and he said, "Hey man, look, I'm sorry. I had to do what I had to do, but I'm trying to do something different with my life." And, you know, I had to say something. I got so mad. I punched this dude in the face. And that was when I got sent back to county and I ended up going to prison the first time. When I was in county jail waiting to catch chain to go to prison, my best friend Cole, my childhood best friend Cole, who I used to do the Roxy's with, died of a heroin overdose. And at this point I've smoked heroin, and dibbled and dabbled with it. But I wasn't IV using drugs yet. Anyway, get out of prison. I was supposed to do 6 months and I turned it into a 17 month sentence because I kept fighting and doing stupid stuff. And you know, when I was there, you know, I wanted to get better. And the main thing I want to focus on is like, I've always wanted to have a good life. I've always wanted to be successful. But I want to do it my way. And I want it to work out on my terms and how I view the world and how I see the world. And it doesn't work like that for me. You know, when we look at that step one that we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol and drugs, our life had become unmanageable. Not only is my life completely unmanageable, but I'm powerless not only over drugs and alcohol, I'm powerless over everything. And until I could accept the fact that I am completely, completely powerless over everything, two and three become a lot easier. Steps two and three become a lot easier. And I'll get into that here in a minute. So I get out of prison and I go to a halfway house in Del Valle. It's called Austin Transitional Center. That's where they send you. They call it ATC. And there's more dope in there than there is out in the world. There's a lot of dope in there. A lot of dope. And so I get out. First thing I did was I shot methamphetamine. Within a few days, I was introduced to heroin. I started shooting heroin. And my first thought on the heroin was this. I was offered heroin. I said to myself, I said, man, I wonder what Cole felt like when he shot heroin. Now, mind you, Cole died of a heroin overdose. And this is what I'm thinking about is, man, I wonder what he felt. You know, like it must have felt really good. Like that was like the insanity in my brain. So anyway, I shoot heroin the first day or first time, and I overdose my first time. I remember I was so scared. I'd called my mom the next morning, and when I called my mom and told my mom I overdosed on heroin, 6 hours later, my mom had a heart attack. And so when we go in, when we talk about in step two for me, I've learned, you know, there was a question that I was asked in early sobriety, and they said, do you love your family enough? Like, do you love the people in your life enough? Give me your favorite person in the world. Do you love them enough to stop using drugs? And I'm like, absolutely. I'm sitting there sober. I'm like, oh yeah, absolutely. And the truth is, in reality, like, I don't love anybody enough to stop doing dope and stop doing drugs. I don't. That's my truth today. And I'm okay with that today because it's gotten me into a place of acceptance and where I am today. And I'm grateful for it. I do want to mention my mom is alive today. My mom's okay. She's doing well. You know, I forget about, I'm going to use iSeams. I'm real quick to forget about what my family goes through and my disease. I'm really quick to forget about it. I'm getting in trouble. I'm getting tickets for driving with no licenses. I'm evading arrests. Started hanging around the wrong crowd, started IV using crack and heroin, and then it just goes on from there and there and there, right? Went to treatment a few times after that. The fourth time I went to treatment, I'll just fast forward because y'all know the deal. Like, man, it gets worse, worse, and worse. Went to prison again. You know, liar, manipulator, cheat, thief, whatever you want to call it, that was me. And so we go, I move on, and my fourth time going to Austin Recovery, which was my first time, or for fourth time going to treatment was my first time at Austin Recovery. I wanted to get better. I did. I was, I've been in a relationship on and off for 7 years, and I was putting my loved ones through the ringer, and I was putting myself through the ringer. And I came to Austin Recovery, and I remember going there, and it was very the group of people that we had. It was a great group of people. They were the male and female clients. They were, I mean, amazing. And we fellowshipped well together. We did. We laughed. We cried. We had a good time. But it, when it came down to the solution, the 12 steps, that's where things changed. That's where things changed. As like I said, for my story is this, is like as badly as I always wanted to like get sober and have a good life, I wanted it on my terms. And so I got out of Austin Recovery the first time, and I started doing what David wanted to do, right? Was not living by principles, was very self-reliant, was not focused on a connection with a higher power at all. And so what I mean by that is I have a belief system in God, right? I believe that there's something bigger than me. Sure, absolutely, right? And I do, and I choose to call my higher power God. It's just my truth today. But here's the deal is when I get out of treatment, I go to treatment and I start sleeping better. I actually start sleeping is what it is. I start eating, right? And I start laughing and joking, and like my personality starts coming back, right? And I'm like, ooh, baby, feel good. You know what I mean? Then what happens is, right, I get into a place where I'm good. I don't, you know, I just feel better. And so I get out of treatment, and the materialistic things start getting coming back, right? The job comes back, relationships, like they start seeing me look healthy, and they're like, oh, David's doing good again. Oh my gosh. And like I said, I'm a master manipulator. I know how to like, I look good, dress good. Right. But the problem is I get out and the materialistic things start coming back, and I'm real quick to put my higher power to the side. Right. So it's like those times where the cops are behind you and you're like, please God, like I'll never do this again. If you know, boom, boom, boom. Same thing. You go to treatment. You're like, I want to get sober. You're in treatment. I'm super treatment savvy. I mean, I'm invested with the staff at Austin Recovery, and I'm having a good time. And then I get out and I'm doing something the complete opposite of what I was taught, you know, the complete opposite. Showing up to meetings high, you know, really showing up to meetings just to like give people that image of like, oh, like David's sober. But like in reality, like the delusion is that like nobody thinks David's sober except David. Like he looks like a shit show, but everybody, you know, not a lot of people are holding me accountable because like, you know, that wasn't the case, you know? And so anyway, I get to a point where my last run, I relapse and I start shooting heroin, crack, methamphetamine. I'm taking Xanax. I'm drinking alcohol. And my life, I remember I left Austin Recovery April of 2018, and then I came back August of 2018. Okay. So let's see, that's 4 months, right? Let's see, whatever. It doesn't matter what it is. It's a little bit of time, right? And so anyway, yeah, it's 4 months. And so in these 4 months, I start going, the insanity has kicked in, and I'm doing anything and everything I possibly can. And I remember I had little stints of sobriety, like a week period or a 2 week period. I got a job and I get a job and, you know, I got a check and I think I had $1,100 to my name. And my girl tells me Friday morning, I go to work and it's also payday. My girl tells me, she says, hey, I'm making a pot of sauce tonight with some spaghetti and meatballs and sausage. Be home at this time. Okay. I was like, okay, babe. Yep. Cool. Got it. I get paid that morning. And I already know that I'm going to the dope house. I have to work. I already know. Runberg and St. John's is my area. Okay. I go there. You know, that's the spot. Anyway, I go to the dope house and I spend $1,100 in 30 hours. Okay. because of my addiction, because of the person that I was, because of the heroin addict that I am and constantly overdosing, there's no trust in my relationship. My girl ended up having a GPS tracker on my phone. I guess you can share your location. I didn't even know about this till later on. But anyway, got a GPS tracker on my phone. This is a funny story. I like to tell it. It's funny now. It's not funny when it happened. But so anyway, there was a I'm at a trap house on, you know, somewhere on Runberg and like St. John's area. And I'm in the dope house. I felt really good because I'm hanging around a bunch of people that are way more fucked off than I am. So I always felt better. You know, I'm like, oh, I'm not as bad as these people. So anyway, I'm sitting in the house and, you know, I'm the one that has like a lot more money. And so like, I feel like, you know, I'm just good. Everybody likes me and whatever. So anyway, there's this tweaker. He's looking out the blinds and, he's telling me, he said, somebody's out by your car. And I said, man, you're tweaking. I said, you got to chill out, bro. He said, no, man, I'm serious. Somebody's out by your car. And I said, man, chill out. Everything's good, man. She's like, man, please just come look. Right. He wanted me to give him the benefit of the doubt. I did it. Right. I go look out the window and my girl's standing there. It's 3 o'clock in the morning on St. John's and Runberg area. My girl's standing out there. And I said, holy shit. I said, man. So anyway, I told the people in the house, I said, man, I'm going to go take care of her. I'm going to tell her to leave. Everything's going to be good. Right. So I walk outside and I start getting loud. I said, what are you doing here? You know, you can't be here. You know, blah, 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 blah. I was trying to act cool. You know, I want people to, you know, whatever. She turns the phone around and she turns her phone around and my mom lives in Pennsylvania. She turns the phone around and my mom's on FaceTime at 3 o'clock in the morning. And my mom said, David, you're going to get your motherfucking ass in that car right now and you're going to go home with Heather. And I said, yes, mom. Yes, yes, absolutely. So anyway, I walk my tail between my legs. I walk back into the dope house, right? They said, oh, did you handle it? You know, you took care of her. She's going to leave. And I said, nah, man, I got to go. You know, boom. I go back to the house and reality hits, man. Reality hits. I'm fucked up, right? I'm super fucked up. So reality hits. And remember that plate of pasta I told – or that pot of sauce she was making? I go back to the house. It's 4 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday morning. Heather, my girl, heats up a pot of sauce. She puts the plate in front of me. About 5 hours later, I wake up and my face is face down on that plate of sauce. Didn't even need it. I've got fucking shit all over my face. The reason why I woke up is because I heard noises in the back. I heard, like, you know, the shower was on and all this stuff. And so my girl comes out of the shower and she says to me, she said, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And I said, I lay down on the ground and I put my arms around her legs and I say, baby, please, I'll do anything. Don't leave me. And I've done this a million times. Please. I swear to God, like, I won't do this ever again. Like, I promise. Right. She says, no, I'm done. I can't do it. I'm done. I said, so by this time, because David wants to get what David wants to get, I go to the extreme, right? I'll do whatever it takes to get what I want when I want it. So I grab a knife in the kitchen, right? And I'm not going to stab her. Don't worry. I mean, don't stab anybody. I grab a knife in the kitchen and I told her, I said, if you leave me, I'll stab myself. That's what I told her. So I grab that knife and I put it to my chest. And now, like, I start sucking in because, like, I really don't want to stab myself, right? I just want to get her attention to say, hey, like, I'm staying with you, right? So anyway, long story short, I don't stab myself. Nobody gets hurt. And she goes to work. And there's something in step one that talks about. It says the restless, irritable, and discontent. Okay. It talks about it's a spiritual malady is what I've been taught. And so I get to a place where with or without drugs and alcohol, right, I get into a place where I'm restless, irritable, discontent. Okay. Even today, and today with me 25 months sober, a little over 2 years sober, I get to a point where I'm restless, irritable, and discontent, okay? And she left, and man, she took my car keys, she took my wallet, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, I'm jonesing. I'm like, my relationship's on the line. There's no way I can fix it. I got no money to my name. I just spent everything I had. And so, but over the first four times I was in treatment, there's always that voice in the back of my head that's like, you got to get sober. You got to do the 12 steps. You know it works, but you don't want to do it. Blah, 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 blah. So I called one person. I called Chris Gates. And I broke his anonymity, but it's okay. Chris Gates was one of the people that helped save my life. I called him. I actually remember the day. I called him on August 25th of 2018. I couldn't afford detox. I was at home. I was at my apartment. My relationship was on the line. There was no relationship at the time. But I was allowed to stay there because I called Chris Gates, and Chris Gates helped me get back in. And there was a waiting list. And I remember I called, it was probably three times a day. I called admissions three times a day. I was shitting and throwing up at the same time. I couldn't get out of bed. There were some things I did in that 2 week span, on this 2 week bender that I don't even remember. So anyway, I overdosed. I was in the hospital. A dad and a son found me in my car on a heroin overdose. And that was the last time I ever used. And I remember coming to a point where, on that August 25th to August 30th is when my clean date is. And the reason why is, I went to Austin Recovery on August 30th. And I get there, or the night before, I had such bad anxiety. I remember going through my car and I'm finding dirty syringes and all this stuff. And I'm like trying to like do all these things. And I didn't want to do it, but like, I need to feel better. And I really didn't, it talks about in the big book, it says, man, I couldn't differentiate the true from the false. I honestly didn't even know if like I was going to be going to Austin Recovery. Like that's how throwed off I was. Like, I didn't even know if it was real. And so anyway, I get to the night before, I'm sweating so bad. I can't sleep. My girl's at work and I go in the cabinet, and I at this point, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm just a drug addict, by the way. And so I go into the cabinet, and I was an alcoholic from the get-go, but I didn't want to admit that, right? I wanted to be normal. And so anyway, I came to a point where I drank a whole bottle of vodka in like 30 seconds. I mean, like literally a whole bottle of – I just chugged that thing. I couldn't even feel it. It was like a Russian vodka. It was disgusting. I wanted to punch myself in the face after I drank it. So anyway, I threw up, ended up falling asleep, and I blacked out and ended up waking up and going to Austin Recovery that next morning. And since then, I've been clean. I went into Austin Recovery and I did the work. I asked a lot of questions. There was having to work with me on things. My counselor there, him and Chris were like still bringing me awareness and accountability, but like there were, you know, you always just want to like hear a little bit and like take nothing because that's just the mind. Right. And so it was hard at first. The first couple of weeks were hard. Like there was a lot of people that were there when I was there the first time, and like having to see them and like still trying to like laugh and joke around and be the life of the party, but then take life serious. It was difficult. So by the time I finished Austin Recovery, I was on step 8, the amends process. I did my fourth step, and I did a thorough one. My sponsor would come out there and he would sit down with me and he would meet with me. And it was amazing. It was a great experience. And my sponsors, I still have the same sponsor to this day. And he's amazing, but I also have people in my life today, that are in the program that are, I also use, to 10 step with, to read some inventory to, and to have as like an accountability group. Right. And so what I want to get into now, my first 9 months of sobriety, my first month of sobriety, I probably went to or first 3 months, I'm sorry, first 3 months of sobriety, I probably went to 150 meetings. Like, seriously, I'm not even joking. I was at every meeting on Sunday night at Austin Recovery. Wednesday and Thursday night, I was at those meetings. I was involved. I was going out to the ranch and I was doing H&Is in my first, even before they shut down, due to COVID, I was doing it. And so my first 9 months of sobriety, I was working at IHOP. My sponsor told me, said, what you need to do is you need to focus your first year of sobriety. You need to focus on your recovery. You don't know how to live. You know, you don't know how to stay sober. And so what you're going to do is you're going to focus on how to live and how to stay sober. I had, like I said, I got out of treatment. I got into the amends process and I owed my girl. I went to make an amends to her and I said, is there anything I can do to make it right? And she said, yeah, you owe me $11,000. And I said, Jesus Christ, holy shit. And so I paid it off. I paid it off in 10 months of me being sober. I nickeled and dimed. The only thing I did was I put money in the basket at meetings. I smoked my first year of sobriety. So food, gas, cigarettes, and that was it. I didn't spend a dime on anything else. Really. And so was working at IHOP and then something happened. And my girl was going to law school up in Pittsburgh. And we had signed a lease together. And to move up there, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And so I went out to dinner with an alumni of Austin Recovery. He's a really good friend of mine to this day. We went out to dinner and I told him, I said, man, something doesn't feel right. I said, I'm scared. I don't want to go up there. I don't know anybody up there in the program. I don't have a lot of money to my name. And I have no job and I just don't know what to do. And he said, man, you need to pray about it. And I was like, screw God. Like, I don't know what to do, you know? And so he said, man, you need to pray about it. And so I prayed about it. The next day, that person who I went out to dinner with called me and he said, hey man, I got you an interview at a treatment center. My girl came home from work and we had already signed the lease. And I said, man, I don't know. I sat her down and I said, hey, like I was given this, I have a job interview at Infinite Recovery. I remember being in treatment and I was telling Chris, I was telling Chris in treatment. And then also like my first like three months of sobriety going to the Sunday night meeting at Austin Recovery and telling Chris, I was like, man, I think I want to work in treatment. And he was like, you just chill out. You know, you'll figure it out if that's what you want to do. But like right now you need to like just do what you got to do. And I said, okay, whatever. Yeah. And I was probably like, you know, went in one ear and out the other, but like I listened to it, you know, I was like, all right, you know. So anyway, I ended up staying here. I got the job at Infinite Recovery and I'm still employed there. I started on the overnight shift, went from third shift to second shift tech to first shift tech, and then now I'm a recovery specialist. So I do something kind of like, what Chris does at Austin Recovery. I teach the 12 steps, I teach Big Book, and then I also teach an accountability group. I have my own caseload of guys who I teach and walk through the 12 steps. I coach families and teach them the process, and I also teach them how to hold us accountable and how to set boundaries with us, addicts, alcoholics. And so, a couple of things that I want to teach on now is, you know, the importance of holding each other accountable, okay? Since I've been sober, I've lost 18 people to this disease. I've been sober 25 months. I've lost 18 friends. I just lost one of my best friends when I moved here a few days ago. I'm going to his funeral on Tuesday. And what I can tell you is, and then there was another friend that I was super close to at Austin Recovery when I was in treatment and he died. What I can say is that I've became numb to it. The emotion behind it, like, is it sad? Absolutely. It's sad. It sucks. But the tears, like, I don't have tears anymore. Like I come to a point where I have to continue to show this message to you guys. I have to come to a point where I have to do this deal and show you guys that it works and show myself that it works because it does work, right? And so the accountability that I want to bring to everybody is this, is like, we have to hold each other to a higher standard today, right? We have to, like, we're killing ourselves daily. My sponsee last night relapsed, right? Guess what the first thing I did was? I called his mom. You know, he's got the family car. I said, hey, you know, so-and-so relapsed. Why? Because I have to hold them accountable, right? I have to let, you know, this is important. And so, like, if you have friends that are out there and their program is slacking and they're not doing what they need to do, it's like, we don't have an option today, right? We know what it's like to, I know what it's like to have a mediocre program and say, yeah, I believe in God, sure, and like, I want to get sober, but like, there's a difference between investing and having a relationship with my higher power and God, or, you know, or God, or like believing in God, right? Or believing in a higher power. I have to have a relationship with it, right? And so I come to a point where I have to do some things that are uncomfortable, right? And I have to hold my brothers and sisters in this program to a higher standard, and that's what I do today, right? There's groups. There's a group that I'm in. It's called Steel on Steel. And what it does is I have a couple of people that come over to my house, and we read off a list of questions. And what these questions ask is, your personal life, like relationships. It asks like some financial questions, and then it also asks like, how's your recovery? And then also like work related questions, like, are you showing up the way that you need to at work? Are you self-reliant or God-reliant, right? Are you running on self-will or God's will? Like, what, you know, and all these questions. And we give each other feedback and we hold each other accountable. So that's one thing I wanted to talk about that's super important: fellowshipping. Right? Like, even though during these hard times, you know, it's no excuse for us to reach out to one another. There's a great technology today. We can reach out to one another and talk to one another and communicate with one another and just do check-ins with somebody. Another thing that I want to talk about is sponsorship. I can't tell you how important it is to have a sponsor. And to also, once you're done working the 12 steps with your sponsor, to start sponsoring. We need to help other addicts and alcoholics. Step 12 tells us that, you know, it's not just being of service, but like the importance of sponsorship and like carrying this message to the other addicts and alcoholics is so important, because people, I only learn from you guys, right? If I'm sitting down with a normal person and they're telling me like I'm fucking crazy and that, you know, I have a drug problem, I'm going to be like, fuck you. You know, you're an idiot, right? But I learn from other addicts and alcoholics, and that's where I'm at today. The reason why I have this sobriety time that I have is because David had a little bit of willingness, right? My higher power came in and did the rest, right? And I surround myself with people that are invested in this deal. Right. That's it. Period. I help others. Right. I clean house. Like if I'm resentful and if I'm like acting wrong, if I'm showing up shitty, guess what? I got to take a look at that and I got to clean that up. Another thing I want to talk about is prayer and meditation. I have to do it. There's a part in the big book. It says, it's one of my favorite lines. Actually, I'll read it so I don't screw up. It says, therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind, right? Today, truly, you know, like, it doesn't matter about the amount of sobriety time that I have, right? Yeah, drugs and alcohol aren't the problem for me today, but this thing up here gets me in some trouble, right? And these motors are constantly running. And so what I got to do is I got to sit there in meditation. I got to slow this thing down, right? I got to bring my higher power into today, right? And I said, even when I'm at work, working in treatment, man, I'm working with other addicts and alcoholics, I got to take time throughout my day right? Every session, before I go into a session, I sit there and I play a little meditation. A minute, I just sit there for a minute and a half and sit there and just start breathing. And like those breathing practices that Chris taught us in treatment, guess what? I use that in my big book, you know, like this, that same exact thing that he does, I do now in my class. And the reason why is because it works. You know, and I continue, there's something that's on the front of my big book. It says, God, I know nothing. Please show me. Amen. I don't know anything. I continue to learn these things. And so, you know, what I want to encourage everybody to do is like, man, if you're struggling, reach out. Take a look at your program, right? How is your program? How are you showing up lately? Is your prayer and meditation good? Are you clear on the first step, right? Are you getting in that obsession a little bit because of, you know, finances or job or, you know, like things that are going on in your life? Like, what's going on, right? I can tell you one thing. I am always available. Don't matter what time of the day it is, I'm always available. And I want you guys to know that I love each and every one of you. I want to make a shout out to the women that are at Austin Recovery right now that are in Family House. You know, it's to see you guys, to see you ladies there with your kids and be the, you know, to really do this deal. And I know you guys have a lot, ladies have a lot going on, but I'm so proud of y'all. It's amazing that you guys are there doing what you're doing. So, I'm praying for y'all. I love you guys. And for everybody else that's on here, I'm so grateful, to know each and every one of you and to be able to share my message tonight. And like I said, if you're struggling, please reach out. You're not alone in this deal. And I want to make something, I want to end with this. We go to first step and, I'm gonna break down step one real quick. It says, we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol and drugs. Our life's unmanageable. The first two words in step one says, we admitted. Okay. And so what I want us to take a look at is that's plural, right? That's not like, yes, I admitted that I'm powerless over alcohol and drugs and my life's unmanageable. But what step one tells me is this, and like, because I felt like my whole life, I wanted to feel a part of, right? I always wanted to feel like, I always felt like I wanted to be a part of something. And like this program, Alcoholics Anonymous, has taught me that I'm a part of. And so step one says we admitted, and what we admitted means that us addicts and alcoholics. And so what it's saying is that I'm not the only one that suffers from this disease, that other people suffer from the same disease that I do. What a relief that is for me. You know, how beautiful that is, that like other people understand the shit that I go through. And that like, when I sit down in my fifth step and I'm telling this person that across from me, all the fucked off shit I've done. And I'm like, yeah, like, whole, like, you know, and I'm feeling like I'm about to be judged. I'm like, wow. And they're sitting there like, welcome, you know, welcome. Thank you. Know, and it's such a relief. And so if you're struggling, you don't feel a part of, then you're hanging around the wrong people. Cause this program, man, it saved my ass and many others. And I am so, so grateful today. And it's because of God, the people that I surround myself with, and this program. And so with that being said, thank you for letting me share. Love you guys. I appreciate it.
David, love you.
Great job, David.
Great job, David. Nice to see you, man.
Yeah, thanks, David.
Great job, David.
Thank you. Thank you.